Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Update with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to talk with us about some of what we can expect next year in terms of themes of practice and that sort of thing. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Jen. Long time no talk.
Long time no talk. It's really hard to imagine that we're already having this conversation for 2015.
Yes, it boggles the mind, as we say, which is a good thing in Zen practice.
It is a good thing in Zen practice. I was just thinking the very same thing. And how fun it is that simultaneously it feels like so much has happened in this year of upping our game to the point where I'm like, wait, was that last year's theme? That's still the theme we're in now. But at the same time, when I think back to the video workshop, it just feels like, my goodness, how can it be time to have one again? But luckily, here we are.
I know. The God's truth.
Yeah.
So much has happened, and I think part of the rhythm of playing the game, I mean, I always wonder about athletes and seasons, and it seems like they're never off. Right? What is the off season? And that's true about practice, which is we're never off. We're playing the awareness practice game. It just seems to me that we do it with different lenses. And
that's always
this process of deepening our practice, right? The practice process never changes.
Yes, that's exactly right. And actually, it feels like the athletic analogy fits perfectly there, doesn't it? Because, I mean, a really high-level athlete, which is, of course, what each of us is in awareness practice, is always in the game. But in lots of, there are different rhythms to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes maybe they're thinking in this way, and sometimes it's the, you know, start of the season, and they've got a few games, you know, and sometimes it's the playoffs, and it's really intensive actually on the court, or, you know, there are all these different rhythms to it, but they're always really in the game. So that is a good analogy. Yep.
Yeah, and then we build a structure that assists us in training deeper and deeper and deeper, and competing, and learning different skills, and that's really what we're doing with these themes every year.
And what feels to me that happens is that as we train in whatever way we're training, another whole area reveals itself as a place to train that can deepen where we are, and it feels like that's where the themes come from.
Absolutely, Jen. It seems like as we deepen practice. You know, that was our first themed year, if you will. It generated the second focus of the year, which was the cooperative and how we play together. And then that translated into, you know what, let's up our game. And and as we train, life reveals where we train next.
And where do we train next?
Well, our new theme for the year is training to live in this here now.
Training to live this here now.
Yes.
I think this here now, I mean, that particular, I don't know, word, if you phrase or however, you know, you put it all together, started really being used this year, wasn't it? Wasn't it this year that came forward?
Yes, I think we started it with the resistance book, you know, to really capture. Oh, happy, blessed day, time, and place.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was sort of, when we started to look at this in October, there's a sense of a very lit up sangha, right? That we're in that place, and it's in this place where it's an analogy to pro athletes, right? When they get to a certain level of the game, the training really becomes in earnest because you train to get to a certain level and then you want to stay at that level and keep going beyond that. If you don't, then your expertise actually starts to decay, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to stay in that place of awareness. And then when you are in that place of awareness, how you play and what you play in, which tournaments you go to, just take on a different feel. Because for a long time, if you're training, to mix metaphors, in the garden to weed, and then you're done with the weeding, now you get to play with flowers. That's a different level of training than to weed. And so we are in that lit up place, and from that lit up place, there are different things that life can offer us that we can actually work with. And brings to mind that the phrase we use in practice, right? Spiritual practice begins when the beating stops. You have to train not to feel bad. You have to train to take responsibility. You have to train to move from offering reassurances to all of those little people inside of you to mentoring the adult or the grown-up awareness that's doing practice. And when you do all of those things, you reach a place where you get to live in the moment.
Yeah. And that seems like... in the moment. And you train, what was that?
To live in the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
What does that look like?
That word live is so key, isn't it? Because what I hear you saying is, okay, so we weed the whole garden. Great. So if we just, you know, kick back and put our feet up and figure we're on cruise now, what's going to happen? Well, the weeds are going to take the garden back over.
So yes, exactly.
It's that place of training to live where we've all experienced. I keep hearing Sherry say it, and I see it all over the email class responses. It's just, I mean, people are seeing things for themselves in their lives that, I mean, we can project. They just didn't imagine that they would actually get to experience. So, and from the upping the game, from that incredible commitment and that focus and that, you know, just that willingness to practice. And so it makes perfect sense to then move into a year of focusing on living there. Not visiting there, not touching in there, but living from that place.
Yeah. And to me, it's that true embodiment of the how, right? We get the how of being in the moment.
Okay.
How does shopping look from the moment? How are you from center? What is the experience of life? And the components are very carefully chosen, right? Because we are in training. It's not like we know. We never know, because the moment is different. Every single moment is different. And so what we always train in is the how of something, right?
Yeah.
And
that is so
skill is available.
Yeah.
So, sorry,
yeah,
I missed that.
I was just underlining what you're saying, that is just brilliantly stated, that we're always training in the how. So, you know, we win a really tough match against such and such team. Well, we don't go in to the next team, assuming that team's going to play the way the last one did. It just, that's not how we go into it. Yeah.
Yes, and but we still need all the skills that we train in to be available and draw on to be in the moment. And that's, to me, the brilliance of the how of this practice, right, which is the structures. We learn to direct the attention. We learn to use the recorder. We learn to, there are all these content process skills that we constantly train ourselves in, meditating, in flavors of them, but they're all the same underlying process or skill, if you will, in terms of how do we get here, and then how do we live from here. But the interesting part to me is that it's so off the court, I practice off the game, right, or the championship or whatever it is, I'm doing my backhand over and over and over again, and I keep practicing all of the ways in which the backhand works. And then I get really skillful in a backhand, and that's available to me. But how I use the backhand in the game, I can only do if I'm in the moment.
Yes.
But it's available to me in the moment, right? And that's interesting, because we're training to be in the moment, to get to the moment, and then to be in the moment, and from that moment, the skill of being here, how does that manifest? And exploring all of that.
So it's like the training is so important, but we don't drag the training around as an idea of how to be in this moment.
Well, it's this wonderful, it's the Zen, it's always that Zen thing, right, where the process is the outcome.
Exactly.
You're trained to be in the moment, so you can be in the moment. You can be in the moment.
Exactly. Yeah.
And yeah. I had this image come up for me, right? Then that condition, I don't know if you know this, but if you put two mirrors facing each other and you put a candle in the middle of the mirrors, you see an infinite reflection of mirrors, of the candle, right, in all mirrors. Right. And what conditioning does is have us always be looking at ourselves in the mirror and forgetting that we're the candle.
Right.
Right. Right? And so when we get we're the candle, there's an experience of being the candle that's very different from the experience or idea of ourselves that's constantly looking in the mirror.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so it seems like life is, I mean, that being in the moment is such a subjective experience in that you collapse, right? There's no subject, object, there's no about, there's no interpretation, you're just there.
Yeah.
And from there, yeah. It's just a completely different experience of being there, moment by moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it points out why, and I think this is going to be a very fundamental part of the year and has been obviously forever, but especially of late, getting out of the conversation is the key. Because
yes.
When we're out of the conversation, we're not constantly recreating that I who actually can't be in the moment. So if I am that I, by definition, I'm not here.
It's a really good point, Jen, because one of the topics could have been, let's talk about it. Because getting to this here now, or being in this here now, or living in this here now, means that we need to get out of the conversation.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, we don't want to, one of the reasons we didn't go with that direction is because we don't want to talk about it. We want to live from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
By getting out of the conversation with it.
So we could say that's one of the tools we're going to employ in learning to live from this here now. Getting out of the conversation. Yeah. And we're coming up against the hour, Ashwini, but were there particular components you wanted to talk about with it, or will those kind of be revealed as we go forward in the next few weeks?
Well, I just want to say that we're opening registration for the video workshop today, so to sign up and reserve your spot. The workshop is on January 18th, and between, I think, 10 to 1 Pacific time as usual.
Okay, and free of charge.
Free of charge. But do reserve your spot because we pay for bandwidth per person or something like that. So it would be great to know what our numbers are going to be before the workshop starts. And, of course, you know, at that point we'll explore the theme, we'll explore the arc. There's an email class that kicks off the year right after the video workshop as part of it. And this year we're really going to do something different in terms of the events that are part of the year long. It's not going to be at home workshops. It's actually going to be a week long, 6 week long intensives, which have an assignment, stop drop text, virtual meditation, and a radio show, all in 1 week. And we do 6 of those throughout the year, and two 14 week RL intensives where we have a bunch of components around that as well, you know, talk and listen, and it's going to be real fun and slightly different format.
Yeah, really, I'm really excited about that, and I think those six intensives are going to be around various kind of, if I remember correctly, kind of manifestations of, you know, this area, bringing this year now to this area of our lives and that area of our lives and this particular focus and that kind of thing.
Exactly. And we'll put the calendar out in terms of the dates for all of those things shortly, but just that registration's open, so we're kicking it off. We're kicking the registration for the video workshop off now, and we'll kick the theme off on Jan 18th.
Excellent. Can't wait. And for sure we'll have you back or other folks to tell us about. I know there are going to be new things on the schedule too, like a brand new retreat and that sort of thing. So we'll give people more detail about all that pretty soon too.
Yep.
All right. Good. Well, thanks
always
so much.
Exciting.
I'm just going to, you took the words right from my mouth. Exactly. Yep. Thanks for being with us.
And I won't steal Michael's thunder, but, you know, we still have one event left in our upping the game focus coming up. So for folks who have not yet signed up, do so. We get to celebrate all of our accomplishments.
Exactly. The best part, the celebration, you can't miss that part. I think, is it December 6th?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Many, many thanks, Ashwini.
Thank you, Jen.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. How about yourself?
Great. Great. I love hearing that lineup of new activities to train us to live here in this year now.
I'm telling you, it's gonna be good.
It really
is fun to have all the different kinds of activities coming up. You know, Suzuki Roshi was right. You know, if we lose the spirit of repetition, our practice will become difficult. But doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over is excellent practice, and it can be really fun to have new things that we do in a new way. So there's room for both.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting. I'm looking forward to all of it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And as Ashwini mentioned, we do have one more thing coming up this year, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Two, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Two. Okay, good. What are they?
Registration is still open for our next at-home workshop on Saturday, December 6th. Don't miss the day-long support, and we'll take time to celebrate our year in the company of Sangha.
Uh-huh. That's the party, and what else?
Yes. This time of year, we all could use extra support and connection, and so sign up for Guidance Day on December 13th and get a one-on-one chance to look at whatever is arising during this season.
Mm-hmm. And apparently, a lot arises during this season.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
It does.
Yeah. I was in a store this afternoon picking something up, and they were playing Christmas music. And I'm always just amazed. You know, didn't we? I don't think we've had Thanksgiving, have we? But I guess there's not a lot of Thanksgiving music, so. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they used to wait until after Thanksgiving, but no more.
No more. Now it starts around Halloween, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a couple of reminders to make guest show to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry. Press *6 and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
Here we go.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael. It's Sheet AV in Philadelphia.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. It's great to hear your voice. What are you up to? What's going on?
So much is going on. I'm now in Philadelphia, which is very exciting. And through the support of practice and awareness, made the decision to leave. I don't know if you remember 6 months ago, and it's the best thing ever, and I'm having an amazing time. So very, very excited about just the ability to just be paying attention when life drops in those things and realizing it's not even a decision as much as it's just going with life and all of the amazing, wonderful experiences that subsequently follow.
Uh-huh. It's more, rather than making decisions, we just kind of nod and say, okay.
Yes.
and it's all taken care of for us.
Yes. But I'm calling specifically because I have started a new relationship with someone, and we've been, and just a little bit of content background, he is divorced and has two children. And so as I'm entering this relationship with him, I'm watching what's coming up for me. And what I'm seeing that I wanted to get some guidance around is watching how he has interactions with his ex-wife, who I have not met. So I hear stories from him when they have an interaction because they share custody of the children. And watching how he has anger, kind of about what happened around the divorce, what situations that they engage with where he's not happy about choices she's making. And what I watch is how I react to his anger. And it's not like a violent anger. It's not even a yelling anger. It's just more of a, I just don't like this person, and this is this person. And what I see is I have a part of me that shows up who doesn't want him to be angry. I see a part of me who shows up who wants to figure out a way to fix it and wants to say, well, what about this? Or maybe you could have said this, or would this have been more helpful? And then I hear the voice that comes in and says, can you really deal with this? You know, is this really going to be okay? What if he's angry forever? And can you end?
Or, of course, the one that occurred to me, what if he gets angry with you?
Yes, yes, yes. And I haven't had that experience. It's actually been interesting because I've known for so one of the things that I've learned is I have a particular sensitivity to anger. I've had it my entire life. Like, the minute someone starts raising their voice to me, literally, I will burst into tears. I couldn't tell you why. It's literally this conditioned response. Like, I have it. And so I watch how whenever anybody in my life is angry, be it a parent, a friend, a neighbor, I literally start almost shaking inside, you know, whether it's directed at, and it doesn't even have to be directed at me, it can be directed at anybody. And so I'm watching this reaction, and what I'm trying to figure out is, how do I want to be? Like, how can I be with all of this? And I feel, I don't know, I just don't know, and that's everything that's going on.
Well, first of all, it does sound like he's perfect for you.
Yes, yes.
Right? In that it is a workshop. And since this is a lifelong issue, then it probably now is as good a time as any to address it. And so when you look at it, what do you see? And what I mean by that is, what is your sense of what goes on with you? Now, you may hear voices, or you may actually have stories that go with it. But you start shaking and burst into tears, and the question would be, why? You know, do you believe somebody's going to hit you? Are they going to hurt you in some way? Are they going to, are they going to do something to you? What's behind it?
Yeah, you know, and I've been trying to figure that out. And I do think, you know, when he gets angry, I watch this energy in my body. There's energy immediately shows up in my body. And, of course, there's all the stories that go with it. I don't burst into the tears. I don't, because he doesn't get angry in a way that somehow triggers that part of me. But there is somebody else in my life who does get angry in that way. And when I see it, I do like that level of anger that this other person has. The immediate thought is violence. Is he going to throw something? Is he going to, you know, and it never has happened ever, but there's just this, I think, this fear of uncontrollable rage and not knowing how to handle that. With the person that I'm seeing, the anger for me, I watch my reaction is, it's a combination of, I want to figure out how to take care of it and take care of him so he doesn't feel angry, because I feel sad that he has that anger, and I want him to have a better experience and to find a way to find peace. And I think that's the part who wants to come out and try to figure out with him how to solve it. And then there's the part that just goes, because I have just the reaction that I have internally, going, oh my gosh, is this always going to happen? Like, how can I deal with this? Because he may just never like his ex-wife, and that she's always going to have these reactions, and how can I be okay with that? How do
right.
I find
well,
my own
yes, of,
with it?
Of course, that is the essential question, right? I'm curious. You don't experience anger at all?
Me personally?
Yeah.
or do I get angry? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And what is your anger like?
I find I have, like, when I have the reaction, it becomes, like, when, like, there was a recent situation at work where, like, someone sent this email or made this action. I felt really frustrated, and I got a bit angry at it. And I watched the anger, and I almost immediately wanted to send off, like, a very passive-aggressive email to this person. But I kind of just went back to that place of, oh, that's probably not the best way to react to that. And then I just kind of sat down and let myself breathe through it and moved on. So I find that it's a verbal reaction that I want to have, that I want to just say to somebody, like, I completely disagree with you or something like that. It's very verbally based. That's the way
it
shows up.
And so you're not aware of feeling rage?
No.
Okay. So whenever you start having that feeling, you go into management.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And your fear with other people is that their management skills aren't as good.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy that you're afraid is going to get violent, you're really afraid of his lack of self-control. With your the new romance, I'm curious why it's not okay for him to have what seems like kind of a reasonable, understandable reaction to his wife, ex-wife.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, I look at it and I don't disagree with the anger. I don't have the experience of feeling like he's wrong. Like, I don't have that experience at all. There's just something, and this is what I can't quite figure out. There's something about the anger, and it's like...
Right, well, and so... of course, and I know you're using the phrase "figure out" as code for pay close attention, because that's what really needs to happen. Now, I'm going to project here, and then you'll look and see if this has any validity. So you are very controlled. Okay, you're allowed to have certain emotions and not allowed to have other emotions.
Yeah.
And so so you're comfortable within that range. Then when somebody comes along who has emotions that aren't in that range, they're frightening to you. It feels out of control. So if you could control him, then you could feel in control. But if you can't control him, then it leaves you with that out-of-control feeling. So, in other words, if you were perfectly fine with the range of your emotions, it wouldn't bother you at all. You would just monitor about how long it takes him to work through this after they have an interaction, and then you would know that he's over it and he's fine and it's not a problem. In the same way that, maybe he gets frustrated when he's driving or gets upset when somebody makes a mistake on a bill or whatever it is, and he's just having his life experience, and it's okay because it doesn't threaten you in any way. But there's something about this, of course, that is really threatening to you. And of course, I would project, it's not threatening to you from center. It's threatening to the system that is controlling how you are with emotion.
Because
if it's okay for him to feel how he feels, if this other guy, it's okay that he just goes into rages, if it were okay that people threw things, then you wouldn't be having any problems, but you also would not be controlled in the same way.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's where I'd like you to look. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, and I'm really seeing how it's a big surprise. It's the perfection that type one showing up of being perfect and needing to react just the quote-unquote right way to every situation, and I watch how I'm projecting that onto him of there's, like, when I, that part that I want to solve it, like, oh, no, let me tell you, there's another way you could have handled that instead of just that's the way that he handled it, and he's human and we're human and I handle it that way. But to your point, like, where do I actually allow myself to just have the experience versus no, 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 that's not okay. You have to actually approach it this way, which is the right, perfect, good way.
Yeah. The controlled by ego way, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what that conditioning is. That's what it's doing to us. So you have to be this way so that I can be the way I'm supposed to be. And then if we are, no matter how repressed we are, we'll be okay because we'll be doing it the right way. As if there's something inherently wrong with feeling, which, of course, conditioning is making a huge case for with everybody, because if it's okay to be however you are, to feel however you feel, where is their control in that? Right?
Yep.
So
yeah.
we have to raise children in such a way that they become controllable adults.
Yeah.
That's what makes society safe. Everybody's afraid. Everybody's repressed. Everybody is watching themselves to make sure that, and of course, it doesn't work because everybody's watching themselves to make sure that they're meeting their own egocentric standards, which may or may not work for anybody else. And all we wind up with is a bunch of miserably repressed, unhappy, often acting out adults, when the real simple answer is just be in touch with how you feel, be present enough to make choices about how you behave with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You're going to keep an eye on it and let me know?
Absolutely. That was so incredible. Thank you so much, Sherry.
You are so welcome. Great to hear from you. Take care.
All right. Take care. Good night, Michael. Good night, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sri Devi. That was a fascinating conversation, Sherry. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, there's just so much in that, isn't there? Just so much in emotions and, oh, God, our traumas with them. And the, you know, the whole belief that you can't feel something, because if you're allowed to feel it, you'll be out of control, you'll act out of it, and that's unacceptable. And so we didn't get the piece of you can feel anything and be conscious and present and aware enough to make choices about your behavior. That's, of course, you know, children only get messages that their parents and teachers and that sort of thing have. And not a lot of adults have that message, so it's not surprising, actually, that it doesn't get passed along to the next generation.
Yeah, it's just what you said just seems so foundational for all of us. So we feel whatever we feel, and however that is fine. And from that place, we're present and conscious, and then choose how we want to respond.
Yes. And of course, when people aren't present and conscious, they're reacting.
Right.
And that's what scares everybody, right? Because you don't know. With somebody who is unconscious and reacting, you really don't know what they're going to do. And they are frightening. So the answer is not be conscious and present. The answer is be repressed. And of course, a lot of, as we've noticed, a lot of folks don't do well with repression.
Yes.
You know, they try and try and try, and then when the acting out happens, it's a big acting out.
And they
are out of control, and they are scary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller here.
Good. All right. Thank you.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Brad. The last time I was on this show was in 2003. Can you believe it?
Wow. That's a while back. How are you?
It is. I wanted to personally say thank you to you, Sherry. I was in a real tough way. It seems that all of my conditioning came to a forefront last March or so, and I was really in a bad way. And my turning point was going to see a psychiatrist who told me that the meditation was helping out 5%, and I was trying to get off one medication, and they wanted to put me on 5. So what I decided to do was to practice. I mean, really begin to practice again. All the books that I've read, it always comes back to your way of teaching. And I got a Zen coach, and I have been practicing religiously since March, and so much of what you have in all of your books now, I finally understand what is being talked about.
Oh, isn't that good? Isn't that the best?
Well, I saw you one time in Herndon, Virginia when I lived over there, and you were talking about how nothing is separate. And I'm like, what does she mean by that? Well, there's not an I that understands, but there is understanding of what is being said there. There's the experience of that understanding. It's fleeting. When it comes up, I accept it, and then it goes. But with all of that as a preface, as you say, I wanted to mention something that keeps coming up for me. I went to the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat in North Carolina. It's my second time doing that. And on that retreat, it became, I finally realized that, as you say, how you do anything is how you do everything. And on that retreat, I realized that I have always needed to have an aspect of perfection of either I have to do things 110% or I don't do them at all. Obviously, very dualistic. So it permeates every single aspect of my life. I can see it from how I make a sandwich up to what I do at work for a presentation. And it's everywhere. And what I'm trying to get more comfortable with is finding that middle path, finding that edge, and how that's done. Because my thought is, and it's probably ego saying this, well, you need to figure out some way that you stand out, that you're significant in all this, that you're worthwhile, that you're good at something. Therefore, you have to try, and you have to be better than other people. And then if you're not, then you're nothing.
Yes, well, so we can see the source of that, right? Either you're better than other people or you're nothing.
Yes.
Right? That's not a pretty picture, is it? Yeah.
No.
So I would concur. I would say you're definitely, you got that message from egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. Again, you know, with Sri Devi, we were talking about being controlled, and there it is. Right, that's
right.
How that system controls you, right? Because otherwise, you would just be you, doing the best that you can do, and enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what your life would be like, because you are a person who does the best he can do, right?
Oh God, I try. And with the thing, what brought up so much of that conditioning last year was getting into a new job. It was telling me that I was never going to be good enough at it. And then I realized that voice was permeating every aspect of my life and feeling legitimately suicidal. I mean, who wouldn't want to feel like they want to die when you keep hearing that all the time?
Oh, absolutely. It surprises me that more people don't commit suicide.
Yeah.
It is a relentless negativity combined with not only the relentless negativity, which is kind of the water we all swim in if you're involved at all with culture, but then with self-hate, the extra added element of, and it's all your fault.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's always been this way, and it will always be this way. So, you know, the first thing, you do record and listen, I'm guessing.
Yes, religiously, if you'll excuse me.
Okay. No. No, it's very good. Yeah. So, that's the direction right there, right? So
yeah,
you know what the lie is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because that system is not concerned about perfection. That system is concerned with controlling and torturing you. It's concerned with getting all of your attention all the time. right?
And
so we know that.
The content's irrelevant, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so we know that. So it's having those recordings. And, Brad, you know, I would take it on kind of one thing at a time. You know, there's probably one area of your life that you could approach in this way. So, you know, you start making the recordings. It's a lie that I need to meet this artificial, ever-moving standard about in this situation. I don't. I do a good job. I do a fine job. I care. I'm there. I'm as present as I can be. I don't need to listen to a voice telling me I have to meet some standard. I don't need to be beaten because I supposedly didn't meet an artificial imaginary standard. We're just not doing that. And you make those recordings. You start listening to them, you know, first thing in the morning, and you just listen every chance that you get until you actually change the behavior in that one particular area of your life, and then you start expanding it.
Yeah, it's worked with my exercise so far. I'm finding a middle path with that. With work, I'm just involved in this incredible creative project where I feel like I've got to put everything I can into it, or what I feel is everything I can into it. And I'm like, well, Brad, other people don't seem to care as much that you're doing that. Maybe you don't need to kill yourself. And then
In addition to that, the creativity that you're seeking that would be very helpful, it sounds like, to have for this project is available when you're not in that conversation.
Yeah.
So creativity, as you know, doesn't come from being driven, from somebody haranguing you, right? It comes from being there, being present, being relaxed, open, And the wisdom, the creativity, the intelligence, whatever, just drops in, and you go, right, I would do that. So again, to start with those recordings that say what doesn't work is, and what I know does work is, and this is what I'm going to practice, and above all, remember that it's a process, which I know you know. But we can let it get us urgent about, well, you know, this is work and this is this big project and, okay, I can relax later, but right now I have to listen to conditioning because everything's on the line with this. And when we stop and go, wait a minute, no. First of all, I don't want to kill myself over this. Second, when my eyes are clear and I'm lucid, I know that killing myself isn't actually going to produce a better product. What's going to produce a better product?
Well, I feel a lot better
is,
than what I was, yeah. So
yeah,
I don't feel that bad now. Since I've been practicing, I have to tell you, I don't get depressed. None of those things. It cuts off all of that at the pass.
Yes.
And it's not that it's gone. It's I have a different relationship with it, as you've mentioned.
That's exactly right. And so as long as you keep your focus on how you want your life to be, as you know, increasingly, that's what you're going to have.
That what you practice is what you have. Yes.
Exactly so.
Thank you.
It just works,
so
doesn't it?
It does.
It just works.
You have to do it.
You have to do it. Exactly. And, of course, that's what karmic conditioning would make us want not to believe. You know, well, I understand that. What do you mean I have to do something? I don't want to do something. Yeah, well, yeah, actually, I have to do what I want. And it's joyful.
It is joyful. And you know what? Mm-hmm. If it's not joyful, I'll be with what is. And things will change in time, and joy will come up again.
That's right. But here's the thing. This is the little thing that you're ready in your practice to look for. If it's not joyful, you're not at center. So you want to dig a little deeper because life is always joyful. Isn't that a good bottom line thing to know?
It is.
Yeah.
That is.
Great to hear from you, Brad. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Brad. That was a fun conversation, Sherry.
I love it when practice works, don't you?
Yes, I do. It's very inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we're going to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The practice theme for this year is upping your game. We are all spiritual athletes in the game of life, and we can train to participate joyfully in the spirit of play. Yes, we are up against a worthy opponent, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. But we can up our chances of success by getting a personal trainer, a Zen awareness coach. The awareness coaches are guided by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching around any number of life issues or awareness practice in general. Coaching places a special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and from old timers that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. Since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to practice, getting a coach assists us to support ourselves while supporting practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, visit sanghamarket.com, go to the services section, click on the little monk, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have more callers, Sherry.
Good. I must say the timing of hearing from our coaches following close upon the heels of Brad's testimonial, that was very good.
Yes.
Good timing. Good timing.
Thank you, life.
Yeah. All right. Who's next?
Who's next? Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. This is Nancy in Virginia, formerly in Maryland.
Well, hello, Nancy in Virginia. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thursday will be 6 weeks since I had surgery to remove the cancer from my left maxillary sinus. And I've been practicing gratitude. I had to laugh when I saw the exercise for the eighth joy class, the email class, because I'm like, wow, this will just help me reinforce this and go more with it. I did one recording of my what I'm grateful for list, and it was 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Yes, really. And there's more. But what I wanted to ask you is whatever guidance you might have about carrying through as life becomes more whatever normal is going to be. You know, I've been in a very special place as I've gone through the immediate process of healing from the surgery. I'm still healing, and that'll take months to get, you know, the tissues back to something that's more or less normal. Yeah, so that's one aspect of it. But how do I practice? How do I keep the focus on gratitude or whatever works on whatever life gives me, rather than letting conditioning do its little nattering in my ear about, oh, this could be better. Oh, this is like that, but wouldn't it be better if it were like that? Or, you know, that person is really, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. God, yeah. If only we could just reach up and change the station.
Exactly.
Which, you know, of course, to a degree we can.
Yes.
Again, now I'll just offer you my thing, and it's kind of like what I was talking about with Brad. So when I decided that I wanted to end that constant assessment, you know, just assessment, it seems until we really catch on to what's going on, it seems kind of benign, you know. Mm. Oh wow, he's really tall. That's an interesting combination of colors. You know, it's not hideously harsh and cruel judgment, but as you say, it's just nattering along there, and it is taking attention.
Yes.
Right. Even though we could say it's relatively harmless. The place that what it's saying, yes, it is relatively harmless. But the fact that it's taking attention away from simply being present is the part that troubles us, because we've watched it long enough to know that it's not going to stay in that benign space.
Right.
Yep. It's gonna start heading downhill as fast as it can possibly get away with it. And then, because we've been noticing this for a while, we realize that it affects our energy system, right? Even though it's kind of a, you know, it's a conversation inside the head that seems to have very little to do with us, it affects our energy. Right?
Oh, yeah, it sucks it like a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And so what I did with it was go on a concerted, concentrated hunt. And that consisted of the beginning and the end of every recording was focused on what I didn't want, not in a negative way, but pointing out what kind of what we're talking about, you know, and then that I an intention to bring greater and greater conscious awareness to it, and what I want instead. So, for instance, if I realize that, you know, why do people drive like that? Gets followed by, I'm really grateful for, okay? I'm grateful that I noticed that because that helps me to turn my attention to what a beautiful day this is. Okay? So I'm constantly bringing it into conscious awareness and beginning increasingly to use it as a training tool. So it becomes something, it becomes something that reminds me of what I choose. And when it does that, I really want to, I'm quite happy to let it have a place in awareness and a certain percentage of attention on it, because I don't want it to be under the radar. I don't want subliminal messages. I want all the messages to be liminal, conscious awareness.
I'm sorry. I think you just said it. If you're not paying attention to that, then you're not in this here now.
Precisely. Because that is a part of what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah? And so I want to be aware of that so that it assists me to have the rest of my attention here where I want it to be. I'm not sliding off into unconsciousness and going where it would like me to go. I'm staying here.
Yeah. Thank you. That's great.
it becomes a training tool. The thing that we have to watch then, of course, is that it goes underground.
Right? Oh yeah, and that's one of conditioning's favorite tricks.
It's not interested in being used like that. And so we go underground, and we want to have recordings to watch for it when it surfaces again. Right, because and when I'm paying attention like that, there will be times when I don't actually see it, and so I don't want to think that it's gone away. So I need to pay closer attention and just see every aspect. So if I say I have 100% attention, well, where is that full 100% in each moment? Expanding awareness, and those are the kinds of recordings that I'm living in. And then when there are insights about something else, you know, well, when I hear a voice in my head say, it would be really helpful if you focused on, I want to make sure that where that voice is coming from. So I'm going to pay close attention because I've noticed that now voices are coming up with ways to distract me that sound a lot like awareness practice. So I'm going to and so it's just this whole running conversation with you and the mentor about how you're using everything to help you stay in this here now.
Yeah. You guys could not have chosen a better topic for 2015.
Good. Yeah, I think so. I think we're there, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so since you're doing the email class, Ashwini and Jen were alluding to this early on, you know, people are having experiences that, I mean, you know, I can't, I'm sure everybody can. You can just feel the fireworks coming through their words, you know, as they're dropping into these places that they never dreamed were possible for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the work is not to leave that place, right? Not
exactly.
Not to get pulled off into that unconsciousness and have it close over. So, you know, this is the year for it, and this is the practice for it, and great things ahead.
Yes.
So, happy healing as we go into that, and let me know how you're doing, okay?
Thank you, Sherry. Will do. Thank you, Michael, too.
All right.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night, Nancy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air, and we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, hi. This is Isata from Peru. Can you hear me?
Absolutely, like you're next door.
Wow, that's the first time it's like that. Fabulous.
Yeah. What are you using? Are you on a phone, on your computer, Skype? What?
I'm on my smartphone, yeah.
Wow.
No, the same as always, but these times, I don't know.
Good connection.
The universe is helping, yeah.
Yes, exactly. How are you?
Great. Counting the days to the New Year's retreat.
I know. Coming right up.
Yeah, how fabulous. I had a question, but then when I was listening, another question came up. I realized that I don't usually listen to this live, no, because I usually have something to do at this time on this day of the week. And I usually enjoy listening to the archives so much, no? Well, now that I was listening, well, as everybody reports, you know, knowing that I had made Gassho, I wasn't in the this here and now, which is so great that the theme is going to be this, no? And I wanted some help or some suggestion in general, no, to get better. Well, get better is not correct, but to train at being in this here and now when there is like a Sangha situation or other people involved, when you're live with other people, compared as it's so easy to be totally present when you're doing something alone by yourself, you know?
Yes, that's exactly right. You've hit it absolutely. So the four stages of practice in our practice, first, there's sitting meditation, which people think is hard, but it's actually the easiest. You know, you're just sitting there looking at a blank white wall, right? You know everything that comes up is you. It's manageable. You know, the voices are going on about pain in your knees or whatever it is, but it's a very small, manageable kind of a world, right? And then we do walking meditation. And when we do walking meditation for the first time, we bring up all of the comparison, right? Am I doing it right? Why doesn't she whatever? Oh, my God, is he never going to get it? Oh, I feel so bad. I shouldn't be judging these people. I mean, they're mm-hmm. meditators. It's my sangha. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that whole world comes into play. Then the next phase of it is working meditation, where we try to actually do something and pay attention. Okay, so we kind of mastered just walking. I'm moving my feet, my arms are going or they're not, but I'm moving my body and I can sort of stay here with the breath. Okay, now I'm going to do working meditation and, you know, every bit of social conditioning comes up with that. Comparing ourselves to others and pleasing people or being judged or criticized or whatever it is. And then those three, which are challenging enough as they are, become nothing in comparison with being in the presence of another human being.
in everyday life. That's the hard, exactly. It's like a scale, exactly. Uh-huh.
Yep, it's the hardest place to be. Now, when we are there, so, you know, you're interacting with another human being. So the easiest part of that is when you're listening. Okay? Because they're doing the thing, and you're listening. So you can sort of tune into yourself and watch what's going on, watch what thoughts are arising and that whole thing. And then it's your turn to talk, and that's where people go completely unconscious. Right? Come to sometime later having no idea what happened. But it's practice. It's all practice.
Mm-hmm. Because I was reading right exactly now, be the person you want to find. And you were writing something about how we learn in interaction, in early interactions, that we have to betray ourselves, you know, ourselves. And it's something that is really deep, I think, and also automatically it's very common, at least for me, but I'm sure for most people, to totally betray yourself in everyday's interaction. Like, not that you do horrible things, you know, but still a little bit betraying, no? Like,
Yes. Yeah, you leave, that's what we learn early on, right? You leave yourself and you become what will have, actually we find out later, what will enable ego to survive.
Exactly, you just leave yourself and you become that, exactly. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that, truly every moment becomes a workshop, right? So we don't dread interacting with other people, because that's how we get to see what's happened to us, right? We don't dread being in work situations because we know that we're going to be able to watch conditioning in action, what it does and how it controls us.
But it's so hard to see it at the same time because there is all this stuff is going on, and it's so hard to watch it compared to work in meditation when you have the space in your mind to watch it, right?
Yes. Well, yes, and that's what we're doing, right? So we sit quietly every day, nobody bothering us, if there are other people, they're doing the same thing. So that's the nice, come back to yourself, feel what center feels like. Yes, okay, I can be here, I can watch everything arise, I'm not as distracted, I can actually get up to three, counting my breath, you know, this is going well. And then we just practice from there. You know, now I go out and do walking meditation, and it's not just I'm going for a walk. I'm doing walking meditation because I want to practice with that, right? And then I go to work. And maybe today at work I'm going to focus on seeing if I can be aware of my breath while somebody is talking to me. You know, I might practice that for 3 months, right? That's what I do every day, just practice staying with my breath while somebody is talking to me, okay? And then the next thing will drop into practice, right? But what I'm not doing is let egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate put standards and talk to me about how I'm doing and how I should be doing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because that's the killer. That's where we really lose consciousness.
So the assignment is try to stay with my breath at work, and I can report back on New Year's, right?
Good. Oh, that's excellent. Yes, about a month. That's a perfect time for a workshop.
That's perfect, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, and again, underlining, so lots of recordings about there are no assessments, no comparisons, I don't want to hear any judgments, I'm doing a workshop, and how I'm doing it is how I'm doing it, I'm seeing what I'm seeing, learning what I'm learning, and that's what's going on. I'm not entertaining any critiques. Yeah.
My God, I was trying to stay with my bread when you were saying that. It was fabulous.
Okay. You're on.
Great. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Thank you
if I don't talk to you before, safe travels. Look forward to seeing you at New Year's.
Thank you so much.
Thank
I will
you.
Have a safe travel. A big hug. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Buonanotte.
Buonanotte.
Thanks for joining us, Isota. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we have about 5 minutes. Would you like to...
Oh, let's try it, Michael. Okay. We're just that kind of people.
Yes, we are. Caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Beth.
I knew it was you. I know that. Doggone. It's funny. You know, I just had that flash of intuition. I saw your face, and I knew it was going to be you. How are you?
Doing the best I can.
There you go. Aren't we always? By golly,
yeah.
It's good to reinforce that, isn't it?
Yeah, again and yet again, particularly when, you know, I'm flat on my face and falling and getting up and falling and getting up.
Uh-huh. Doing the little
room what I want to talk about. Yeah, but what I want to talk about is my recording and listening practice.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing this every day, and I've been doing it on my way to work.
Good for you.
I start with the daily recollection, and what I've discovered is that I have recorded it maybe 12 times trying to get the perfect recording.
Uh-huh.
And what I noticed is I flub up at the same point every single time.
Uh-huh.
And in recording and listening to this do I even notice that.
Uh-huh. And I hope you think, isn't she just the dearest, sweetest, most sincere person on the planet? I just love her.
No, I've never said that.
Something like that?
But then I've had like that was a lot of fun, and it's interactive. I listen to it, I speak it with myself. So I've moved on to other things.
Uh-huh.
A couple of Universal songs from Universal Dance of Love.
Uh-huh.
And when these come on, it's just like it's the only thing I want to listen to. I don't want to listen to the radio. I don't want to listen to podcasts. I don't want to listen to teachers. I just want to listen to this about 18 minutes of, like, ohms. And not kind of like, and I've got this section in there about courage.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, thank you, I love you. Please.
Uh-huh.
I sing it.
Oh, lovely.
And
I've
got about 45 minutes worth of recording of singing, yes, thank you, I love you, please. And then sometimes I listen to it, and sometimes I just sing along.
Mm-hmm. And you're addicted.
Okay, now you're gonna tell me that I'm doing it wrong, right?
No, I'm going to say, wow, that's fabulous. I mean, that's it. And the way we can know that's it is it's all you want to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when I do that, by the time I get to work, I'm in a very grounded place and am open and willing to doing my work as working meditation. If I listen to something else, then it can take me a half hour into my work session before I've kind of found a place of willingness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're not. It doesn't take you to the same place. When you're listening, it sounds like there's part of you listening to whatever somebody's talking about, and then part of the attention gets snared by karmic conditioning, and you get kind of separated out there. And you don't feel grounded. Yeah, so don't do that. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then I'm kind of like tossed around by whatever I encounter throughout the day.
Yeah, Yeah. Now, you know, you don't have to just limit that recording to on your way to work.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's just that's where the habit is. And I'm on, mm-hmm. I'm by myself in the car. So I have it on, like, you know, full speakers and it's surround sound and, you know.
So my encouragement, Beth, is keep making recordings like that. You know, keep looking for keep looking for the things that take you to that place, because that's what recording and listening is about, right? It takes us to the place we want to live, so that we get to practice over and over and over being in that place, knowing what it feels like, feeling what life is like when we are present and grounded and centered like that. And recording it is so perfect, because you record something and you listen to it and you think, okay, I'll give it a week. And you listen, you keep listening to it and you realize, you know, it's not taking me there. So what is? And what you're doing is you're zeroing in on it. You know, what is that feeling I want to feel? Well, I go back to this other one. There it is. Okay. All right, there it is. That's the feeling I'm looking for. Now you're looking for other places, other music, other songs, other things you want to sing, other things you want to chant, other things you want to talk about, whatever it is. But what they have in common is they're bringing you home. They're bringing you to here.
I think my resistance for a long time is because I was using recording and listening to talk me into something.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to having an experience.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It was, like, yeah. Yeah. And what you're finding now is, right, what you're finding now is you're just with you. It's not somebody talking you into being with you.
Yeah, there's nothing to believe.
You're just here. That's right. That's exactly it. That's it.
Then I don't feel bad. I don't feel good. I don't... there's an awareness of what's going on, but it's more of a curiosity.
Yes. You're here.
And then the work goes well, and then the clients are happy, and then...
Right. And then you get to eat, and it's a good deal all the way around. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
sleep in a warm place. And...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's lovely. I hope you do more and more and more. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. About 6 months, so it's kind of like it's no longer like a discussion.
Right, you just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes care of you. You want to do it. Feels good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm right there. It's funny, isn't it? Because there's so much resistance. So, and then we just kind of tip over the line, and it's like, okay, this is what I want to do. What was all that?
This is what I want to do.
I don't know. I don't care. This is what I want to do.
And when I'm kind of have that practice under my belt, when I do encounter somebody who's angry with me, I have other options, because I do fall into that, you know, that whole anger thing. And when I run into people that are angry with me or whatever with me, you know, it has nothing to do with me.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You run into people who are angry.
Yeah.
Very likely has absolutely nothing to do with you. And then you have someplace else to turn your attention that is you. That is you. And you can get back to you and just.
Right. And it's, not, and it's like that little girl doesn't immediately come up and take over.
Exactly.
To that response of anger. So,
Yes. And you're not stuck there.
Yeah. And when I am, I have. About 18 minutes of chanting and singing.
Right. To get back to you.
Yeah.
Yes,
and I have been doing that.
That's fabulous. I am very, very happy for you. Okay. Let me know, huh?
Yep.
I know
one
we're
day
out
at
of time.
Time,
so.
Arigato.
Yeah, exactly. Thank one you. Day at a time. Thank you, Beth. Great to hear from you.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. And thank you, Sherry, because we are at the end of the hour here.
And thank you, Michael.
Yes,
I so appreciate it. Go team. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Talk to you then.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Bye.